Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From newsounds.org, this is the Soundcheck Podcast, our series of live in-studio performances streaming live on Facebook and YouTube. I'm John Schaefer. The South African singer Nakane has a simply stunning voice, and he writes songs that are a mix of soulful ballads and glam rock-infused dance music. It's the work of a man with an interesting backstory. He came out as gay to his strict religious community in South Africa. That went about as well as you might have expected. These days, he's living in London, and that's where he made his record called You Will Not Die. Nakane is here to play some of those songs for us today, beginning with this one called Interloper.
When last did you go to Bacchanalia? He seems to have seen you there. You know the one who puts me in hysteria and makes me behave like a cur. You know the one who will shame me in matches of the lawn and make me believe that I've been alone in some hopeless void. You know the one. Hey. Come on. You know the one.
The birds, the
That is Nakane with the song called Interloper, live here in our studio. You heard Nakane singing and playing our piano, with Charlotte Hatherley playing guitar and keyboards, and Keir Adamson playing drums and electric drums, and chorus in a black box somewhere, presumably. Nakane, great to have you here with us.
Chorus in the black box. Yeah. Thank you so much. Thank you.
So I mentioned in introducing you that you grew up in a kind of a fundamentalist religious community in South Africa. Was it a musical community as well?
Oh, my God, yeah. My mom and her sisters and some of my uncles, which I've never mentioned, all sang in choirs, and they all were classically trained singers, singing operas, pieces by Handel, Mozart, etc., etc. So when I was a young child, I mean like pre-5 years old, my aunt was already giving me lessons on how to sing. She's a music teacher.
Yeah. Wow. Okay, so that sort of answers my next question, which was going to be, where did you learn to sing like that?
From my family.
Yeah.
And I mean, my mother is, I don't want to say judgmental, but she has very strong opinions about what a good voice is.
Uh-huh.
And she's very honest about whether my performances are good or not. Uh-huh. So I can always trust on her to give me the truth.
Well, now, you know, part of the backstory is that people in this community have strong ideas about things in general, including the way people should behave and live their lives. So, you know, does your family, has there been a kind of a rapprochement? You know, do they come to your shows? Do they listen to your songs?
Oh, my family's amazing. Very supportive. My mom sometimes calls me singing songs of mine, saying that she sings them better. She does not. And then when I tell her that she does not, she says, well, I'm in my 50s. And I'm like, then why did you send me the voice note then, if you're not going to be able to take my criticism? But yeah, very, very, very supportive. The thing that they knew I always loved, I had a lot of passions when I was younger. But music has always been, I don't know, the thing, because it was in my body. You know, your voice is, it's something that's, you can't escape it. Guitar, you can put it down. Keyboard, you can put it down, whatever, you can leave them, but your larynx and your vocal cords are part of you, which is what is miraculous about it, I think.
Well, and you know, when you're taught opera, you're usually taught one kind of vocal style, but you know, you have this lovely deep range, but then you have this soaring falsetto as well. So at some point, it seems you went beyond Bach and Handel and Mozart and started charting your own musical course.
Well, yeah. Before my teen years, I was, you know, attached to my mom's apron. Not that she ever wore an apron, but if I say too much of a fashionista. So before my teenagers, it was all I listened to. That and Marvin Gaye, you know, because, come on. And then when we moved to Johannesburg, because we lived in Port Elizabeth, when we moved to Johannesburg, I became a teenager. And I wasn't a difficult teenager, but I was starting to sort of carve up my own ideas about what music could be, because at that point I was starting to realize that I wanted to be a songwriter, and I didn't want to write any classical pieces. I wasn't interested in it. I mean, I was interested maybe in jazz. I still had plans to go back to Port Elizabeth and study jazz, but then I discovered this thing, this wondrous thing called MySpace, which is where I discovered almost all the music that came, I mean, above and beyond what I grew up with, that came to shape me musically. A musician that I really loved and who really changed my life was Rufus Wainwright. I used to wake up in the morning every Saturday and go to my dad's office where he'd be working, and I'd be listening to Rufus Wainwright's songs on MySpace. Mm-hmm. And then the great thing about MySpace was that you could discover other musicians based on what musicians your artist was listening to. And then I discovered people like Jonas Policewoman. I discovered Sir Ross, Radiohead, Joni Mitchell. The list goes on.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, on the album, on You Will Not Die, there are a couple of covers that seem kind of germane to this part of the conversation. There's The Age of Consent by New Order.
The Order.
And a deep cut by David Bowie called Sweet Thing. So the spirit, the sound of Bowie, and the kind of driving dance rhythms of New Order, do you find those throughout this record, it seems?
Well, yeah, I suppose. Okay, sure. You know,
I cannot possibly be the first person to have said that to you.
No, that's why I was like, all right, whatever. Do you know what the thing is, though? You know, I remember when I was younger. I remember when I was 20 or something, and I started reading a lot of music magazines and websites, and I started discovering websites, and blogs were pretty big back then. And most musicians, and it was all that whole like post-punk thing,
right,
that are starting, Interpol,
Strokes,
Block Party, exactly, that's what. And whenever people are like, well, you sound like you're influenced by et cetera, et cetera, they're like, oh, I mean, don't know who those are. And I always thought that you should really raise up the people who've, you know, influenced your ancestors, so to speak, musically. Mm-hmm. So if someone, I mean, unless it's someone that I really loathe, but it's also someone else's experience.
Yeah.
Who are you to tell them how someone hears your music has nothing to do with you? When I was in my teens, I was really obsessed with George Michael, right? My music teacher knew that I was obsessed with George Michael. So whenever I wrote a song, she'd go, oh, this reminds me of George Michael. And I thought, it sounds nothing like George Michael. But it was a thing that we shared together, right?
Yeah,
our obsession with George Michael. And also she knew that I loved George Michael. So she could only see it through that lens, right? And really, it doesn't matter what I think, you know, what you get from it, as long as, well, even if it's bad, but get something.
Right. As long as listeners take something away from it.
Yeah.
And there's a lot to mine on this record, on You Will Not Die.
Yeah.
I mean, questions of identity and sex and spirituality.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe not religion per se, but there's definitely a spiritual thread through a lot of this.
I knew when I was writing the songs that I disavowed a decision that I had made long ago that I would never write about my family.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, it's like the whole thing of being a photographer, that you always exploit someone or something. Whereas as a musician, I feel like you can, but you the only person I want to exploit is myself, right? But then I was nearing my 30s and I was going to write this album, and I knew that I wanted to be on my childhood and me, basically my life up until like 30,
mm-hmm.
right? And so I had to write about my family. I had to write about the Presbyterian church that I grew up in. So I couldn't write about my family without writing about the spirituality, because it's such a big part of it, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I'd left the church about 3 years ago, at that point, 3 years prior. And so it was too easy for me to have vitriol and be angry about the church and be bitter. And that's also, it's done, right? Yeah, so the church is messed up. And then, you know, go read my blogs and my Twitter. You know what I mean, what my feelings are. But I wanted this album to be sober-minded about it, to look back and go, you know what, okay, you may have messed people up, but you meant well. My family, at least. I don't know about the church.
Well, and that's actually a line in Presbyteria.
Exactly. You always meant so well,
you always
didn't
meant
you?
Well, yeah.
You always meant, you did the best you could.
Right, right.
Not the church, though. The missionaries did not mean well.
Well, and that kind of gets us to the next song, New Brighton, which, if you don't bother to listen to the lyrics, is just like a great dance floor banger.
Yeah.
But when you listen to the lyrics, it's like...
It's really dark, isn't it?
Well, it's...
No, I'm kidding. It's not dark. It's a pop song.
But it's full of allusions to things like, you know, the colonial legacy in South Africa.
Completely.
Right there in the name, New Brighton.
Exactly. Do you know what I loved a lot about South African struggle music was how much fun it was. Not all of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but... And that is about people being uprooted from their houses and being moved to the ghettos. You know, Meadowlands. And people are dancing to it. That was all for two reasons. One, you know, people are bummed up already about their lives.
Yeah.
You know. Two, maybe if the white apartheid government thought it was just a fun song, they wouldn't get through. Which is why they used, you know, metaphors, et cetera, et cetera. So I took from that, from that world of using up-tempo fun music, but sort of getting them with words.
Well, a lot of...
It's kind of satanic, isn't it?
A lot of Caribbean music did exactly that. You know, Calypso, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Fun, happy stuff, yeah. But early Calypso messages, if the white governors of those islands had been listening, they would have been appalled.
They would have been appalled. Or they would have murdered people.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Yeah. Or even in Zimbabwe, you know?
Exactly.
The sounds of Chimurenga. That wonderful music of Thomas Mapfumo.
God, those guitars.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Can you play guitar like that?
No.
Does anybody play like that anymore?
Yeah. Yeah, not me.
Yeah, okay. talking about a style that's inspired by thumb piano music. Actually, there was a thumb piano on one of the songs.
By the Gullet.
By the Gullet.
Yeah, Mbira. Yeah.
But for this song, you've strapped on the guitar. So we're speaking with Nakane. Let's hear a live performance of the song New Brighton. His album's called You Will Not Die, and he and the band are playing for us today on this edition of the Soundcheck Podcast.
point was Frederick's fort. I was up. Gunslingers, suckers, drinkers, rub shoulders for taste of something sour.
The song is called New Brighton, another live performance by Nakane here in our New Sound studio on this edition of the Soundcheck podcast with Keir Adamson on drums and Charlotte Hatherley on keyboards, Nakane singing, playing guitar on that song. So the song is set in Port Elizabeth. Have you been back to Port Elizabeth since moving to London?
No. People can read about it.
You still persona non grata there?
You mean the fatwa that was put out on me? Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes, but I've been to Johannesburg. I've been to South Africa.
Okay.
But not Port Elizabeth.
Well, you know, part of what that song is about is naming things.
Oh, you know,
the British came and they just took lands and named them. New Brighton.
Exactly.
What about my mother and my sisters, you
Where
say?
Where was their name?
Yeah. Mm. What does the name Nakane mean?
It means build each other up.
Does it literally?
Yeah. Mm.
In what language?
It's Xhosa.
Xhosa.
And the funny thing is, Xhosa people always say that. It's a clause that cannot be translated.
Uh-huh.
So when people ask, what does the name mean in English? So it's like, well, it means build each other up, but it also means support each other.
Wow. I did want to ask you about the album title, You Will Not Die, which at first sounds like, you know, a kind of desperate, grief-stricken plea, but which can also be read
as hopeful.
As a statement of support.
You're not going to die. You're going to wake up in the morning and you're going to be okay. Oh, if not okay, you'll still be alive.
And you'll have another day to figure it out.
Suffer even more and more until you die.
Yeah, that's an uplifting note.
What does Nina Simone say? She talks about the boon of death and compassion. One of her songs called Compensation. Anyway, it's called the boon of death.
Yeah.
Death can be seen as something negative, but it's also kind of beautiful, you know? It's rest.
Yeah.
Or hell. Or heaven, depending on what you believe in.
Right. But getting back to the whole idea of, I can't say cosa the correct way, but...
Cool. It is the second most difficult language to learn in the world, apparently.
What's the first?
Mandarin.
Ah.
And they're both tonal languages.
And yet somehow a billion people have managed to do, to learn Mandarin.
Yeah.
So it is a tonal language. It's also a click language.
Yes.
Is it your, which is your first?
First language.
It is your first language.
English is my second language. I only learned English when I was 7 years old.
Okay. Mm. And... In addition to writing songs, you've written fiction.
I've written a novel,
And does all of that happen in English, just kind of naturally at this point?
Well, yeah, because English is the medium of teaching in South Africa, in most schools. English is still seen as a language of intelligence, quote unquote.
Right.
So we taught in English, and I remember growing up in school where teachers would write in our diaries, for, you know, discouraging parents to speak to us in Xhosa, to speak to us in English, etc., etc., so that our English could become better. My generation was sort of like the buffer generation between apartheid and post-apartheid rainbow nation, South Africa, which is a myth, of course. So a lot of us were seen as this generation that was supposed to be, I guess, a baton between the two generations that would make everything okay. But it was really just like a really, really madly colonized education system, which preferenced English above all other subjects.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, languages at least.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I guess it makes sense that you would, growing up listening to Marvin Gaye or...
Roberta Fleck.
Yeah. Or Jonah's Policewoman or Interpol or Block Party, that you would gravitate towards English. But with your native language being such a kind of poetic
beautiful
language.
Go check up someone called Simphiwe Dana, Simphiwe Dana. She's an incredible musician. She was called the new Miriam Makeba when she came out. And just her lyrics are incredibly poetic.
Yeah.
And I'm still 31 years old. Who knows what I'm going to be writing in 40 years.
Yeah.
Madonna just put an album where she's singing in Portuguese and Spanish.
Right, right.
You know, if she can do it.
You're not going to die tonight. You'll wake up tomorrow.
We don't know that for a fact.
I have it on good authority. It's right there on the album title.
It's true.
You Will Not Die is the name of the record. Nakane is with us here in the studio today. And this next one is called Star Red. Here once again is Nakane.
And I found you. I found you in the absence. I went back home to Alice. I remember the moment, a worrisome fragment, when I read you the Bible, because you were simply unable. Story. Been home to Alice. I remember the moments, no, never the ailments, the beyond the Bible. I'm still wicked and I don't mind the revels. mind.
Once again, Nakane and his trio performing here in our studio. The song is called Star Red. Nakane, you were saying before that, you know, when you started writing these songs, you realized you were going to have to start writing about your life and your family. And that song seems to be like kind of exhibit A of
that. Oh, completely. I think it was the first one that made me realize that I can without being mawkish about it.
Yeah.
It's about my grandmother, and I always wanted to write a song about my grandmother. But I had to write about the town that I was born in, which is called Alice, in English. And it was named after Queen Victoria's daughter. It was given to her as a present.
Nice.
And
how nice for her.
Isn't it? Apparently she didn't like it. She was like, I'm not into it. And then she went back to England. But we still have the name. it was one of those songs that I really wanted to write to honor my grandmother, who's an ancestor. And the album is dedicated to her. And she's the only person who's thanked in the album, because there's always someone who's going to complain that they're not thanked in the album. So I told my friends and my family that the only person who's thanked is dead.
Yeah.
And, you know, I thought it was funny.
Yeah.
I guess not.
Well, the album is, it's just full of some amazing singing and writing. And you're doing the Meltdown Festival later this year, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I am. It's very exciting. I'm playing the Purcell Room.
Oh.
I do love him.
Very nice. Purcell. Henry Purcell.
The right guy.
Who's curing? Can you do the Cold Song? Do you know the Cold Song by Henry Purcell?
I don't know that. I'm still obsessed with Dido and Aeneas at the moment.
Well, yeah, When I Am Laid in Earth. What a great song.
It's also kind of a needy song, isn't it?
Well, yeah.
She didn't need to kill herself, did she?
No.
If she's saying go away, then she kills herself. She's kind of... I'll talk about this later.
Yeah.
It really annoys me, that whole Dido. She's so manipulative.
Dido and Aeneas, Henry Purcell, as we say here in the States. But you should check out Klaus Nomi's version of The Cold Song by Henry Purcell.
I love Klaus Nomi.
Oh, it's amazing. From 1980.
1980, yeah.
Shortly before he died, one of the first musicians to die of AIDS.
Yeah.
But so your record is You Will Not Die.
You Will Not Die.
And Nakane, it's been great having you and Charlotte and Keir here with us in the studio
today.
Aren't
they lovely?
They really are. And they sound great.
Incredible.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
This is Soundcheck. Yeah. That'll do it for this edition of the Soundcheck podcast, but as always, there's much more to be found on our website. Lots of other performances, video shot in the studio, the daily gig alerts, weekly music roundups, new sound shows, and more. Check it out at newsounds.org. Our technical director is Irene Trudell. Our associate producer is Karen Havlick. I'm John Schaefer. Thanks for being with us.